And welcome to this Community and Wellbeing Committee, and a special welcome to our guests, who are Alistair Gold and Jeremy Rowe from Freedom Leisure, and Les Clark from Housing Plus. Hi Les,
hi.
Nice to see you again. Yeah. Could you please make sure your mobile phones are on silent or switched off, please? Thank you. Right, we'll start with the first item, which is the minutes of the meeting of the 18th of October. Has anybody got any queries? Is anybody happy for me to sign them? Okay, thank you very much. Apologies, Jackie, please.
Councillors Leeson and Phillips, Councillor Hood, Cabinet Member. We've also got apologies from Gabrielle Whitehouse, Head of Regulatory Services.
And can we also record Norma Phillips'
yeah.
Absence? And got that. Sorry, yeah, sorry. Okay. Right. Any public question time? Is there any public questions?
No.
No council sessions. No. Okay. Right. The next item is item five, which is the health and care overview committee. The minutes have not been published for that yet, so I'll just give you a bit of an overview. Was that the last meeting we discussed a lot of social care, the ICB and the ICS workforce, and there's quite a lot of information in that meeting. So if I can say to you, you know, have a look at that yourselves, you know, call it up on the website and listen to it, because there's quite a lot of information. And as I say, I haven't gotten. The one thing I will mention is on the website, health and care. Yeah. It was on the 28th of October, is that right?
Yeah
the 28th of October. Yeah. And also on that meeting, there was a lot of work done. A group of women. Jill Hood was one, I was another, and Janice Silvestro, she chaired it, and another couple of other ladies. Actually, we did a lot of work on endometriosis, and I don't know whether you're aware of that, but it's quite debilitating for a lot of women, and it's just been brought to the forefront, actually. And some women are waiting 8 years before they get any... Yeah, so you'll appreciate what I'm saying then. So in actual fact, the work was done and it was quite interesting. And it actually hit the national papers, the Times, yeah. So, you know, that was one thing that...
Pardon? It's a bit hard to diagnose.
Yeah.
They don't look for it.
Yeah, I think it's something, you know, that... but anyway, yeah. So that was quite good. So, as I say, if you're interested in looking at that, have a look at that on October the 28th, because there's a lot of information in there. Right, item six, called in items?
No.
Nothing, okay. So we go straight on to item seven, which is, can I call you two gentlemen to the table, please, and ask you to give your report?
No.
Pardon? Yeah. Anna, you're more than welcome to come. You know that. It is Anna as well, isn't it? That needs to come to the table. Yeah. Anna, if you want to join, please come along. Right. Is there anything you'd like to bring forward, Anna? Do you want to? Would you like to introduce yourselves? Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Jeremy Rowe. I'm Operations Director, so I cover the whole term portfolio for Freedom, and obviously support the team locally in the region and Stafford.
Good evening, I'm Alistair Gould, the Area Manager for Freedom Leisure across the Derbyshire Dales and Stafford Partnership.
Thank you. Was there anything you'd like to say before we, you know, start asking questions? Probably yes. Yes.
I think Alistair's going to do an overview of the annual report. So you've already received.
That's right. Yes.
I think if you talk to a number of the key points, and then possibly at the end of that, if there's an opportunity for questions.
That's fine. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect. So good evening, all. Firstly, thank you for allowing us to discuss and present the annual report. Hopefully, you will have had a chance to read through some of the report and potentially digest many of the positives that have taken place over the year of April 23 until the end of March 24. I've picked out some key parts from the report to draw your attention to. I'll share these shortly, follow up any questions you may wish to ask or clarify. Within the report, there's some subheadings, and I've just summarised some points within those areas just to headline kind of information there. At the start, you'll see around participation. You'll note from the report that there has been a significant increase in the overall participation figures for the Stafford Partnership as a whole, with a 12% increase from the previous year, with just over 125,000 further visits in the year 23-24. Within the report itself, it's been broken down into key areas that display the split and change. You'll see the leisure venues focuses on membership, learn to swim, and the gymnastic membership bases. Overall, we've displayed a growth for gymnastics in the year, and as a total for Stone and Stafford, a small decline for the total members on swimmer lessons and membership. This largely relates to the Stafford Leisure Centre, which, as we'll come on to further in the report, had significant investment of around £160,000 into the cardiovascular equipment in August 23. The growth to attract new members and to encourage individuals to return to the facility has been slower than anticipated, but clear action plans are in place for this year, and we're already seeing a significant positive movement on the previous year. If we look across the heritage and culture side, this draws reference to the Gatehouse Theatre, with a 10% increase in theatre show attendance, with an impressively packed out performance calendar which continues to grow. There's a small decline in the volume of schools engaged with the heritage venues, but is largely due to the constraints within the school's finances. You'll see information on Shakespeare, which displays a decline year on year, but there are some mitigating factors to this, with a shift from the widely recognised most popular Shakespeare production of Romeo and Juliet in 2022 to A Midsummer Night's Dream. To note, there are also some carried over performances from the previous year. Stafford Health Community and Events displays an uplift on the previous year, with a 6% increase on the half marathon participants on the 40th anniversary of this event. The 10K displayed similar numbers to the previous year, and our half program in space participants increased by 15% the previous year. The next section to bring you on to is colleagues, and you'll see that this discusses our colleagues across the partnership, which also reflects some of the challenges we've faced as an industry in terms of recruiting into the leisure sector, with a significant reduction overall in trained qualified individuals applying for job roles. As an industry, we've addressed this by supporting with a variety of different methods, but a significant investment into training for these individuals. No longer do you need to come into a lifeguard role with a national recognised qualification, but we're supporting our colleagues in going through those training mechanisms. We've also invested significantly in further training for individuals that have a real passion for leisure. There have been some real positives in the colleague development in the year, with colleagues progressing into more senior roles within the partnership. As a whole, as Freedom, we've invested into the overall infrastructure, support the desired growth, and to provide further support to the teams delivering locally with the roles including National Aquatics Manager, National Commercial Manager, Group Health and Safety Leads, Regional HR Managers, all of whom have been heavily involved in the Stafford Partnership over the last 6 months to help grow and drive forward the partnership. You'll see an extensive level of information in relation to the volunteer workforce across the Gatehouse and Heritage Venues, which not only provides such support for ourselves, but again, positively impacting the local community of Stafford. The next section you'll see is around marketing and promotions. You will see within the marketing and promotion section, lots of shared content around what's taken place within the facilities over the year. Our social platforms are a fantastic way and a fantastic place for us to display what the centres are delivering to showcase the impact this is having on the community. There have been a variety of promotions in operation throughout the year that are designed to attract new members into the facility and new users, but also to have campaigns around our current members that can be rewarded for referring customers across and to be rewarded and support retention. The next section you'll see is around energy. The energy performance within the report reflects a similar level of energy consumption in relation to the previous year. There are some small mitigating factors. For example, as we speak positively about the gatehouse and its increased volume of performances and shows, this clearly requires further energy consumption to be in operation. Staff at Ledge Centre also welcomed the Blueberry Cafe, an area that was not in use previously. This supports a further increase in overall energy consumption. As you may be aware, staff of our council were successful in three schemes and interventions to support the energy performance: the solar PV at Stone, Stafford Leisure Centre to look at Kelly Showers, and an expansion of solar PV at Stafford Leisure Centre as well, all which are planned to take place in the financial year of 24-25. The next section you'll see is around health and safety, and the report displays over the year we're at 0.06% in terms of our volume of accidents versus total participation. This is 0.03% higher than the total freedom measure, largely due to the nature of the schemes like to the gymnastics programme that operates at Stafford Leisure Centre. However, both are lower than the national figure of 0.09%. In terms of accidents, these are all reviewed and adjustments made where possible to help prevent and reduce the volume of reoccurrence. The final section you'll see is around the projects and investment. This displays a bit of a mixture between the large investment in repairs and maintenance and also the capital investment that's taken place at the centre. There's been repairs to some heavy intensive equipment in the facilities, some of the air handling units at Stafford, repairs to the heat pumps at Stone, and investment into areas like upgrades to LED lighting at the gatehouse to drive energy efficiencies. What is also shown in this section is a significant investment into the refurbishment and development of the cardiovascular area and functional training area at Stafford Leisure Centre. This was to the value of £160,000. The report shows a list of some of the upcoming projects in 24-25, as I touched on loosely just a minute ago. Solar PV, and it's due to be installed on the roof of Stone at Stafford Leisure Centre. The expansion of the gymnastics provision at Stafford with the launch of the gymnastics hub. And there is also further relaunches of schemes like exercise referral. What you'll see on from here is the appendices within the report that highlight some of the work that's taken place over the year and further details around that are within the report. There have been some couple of key milestones, and one to draw reference to is Stone and achieved last year the swim school performance of the year across the Freedom Leisure internal rewards, which recognises the huge growth that the swim school at Stone has had and the success it builds on month on month. I'm not sure if there's any questions at all, anyone?
Yeah.
I appreciate I did a whistle-stop tour.
No, that was very good. Before we go any further and before I take any questions, can I just say to you, if there's any questions on pages 47, 48 and 49, which is on pink paper, which is confidential, then I must ask people to leave the room. I will not be taking any questions. If you've got any questions on those papers, then I will have to ask you to, the people that's not on Stafford Borough, to leave the room. Okay, so I'll leave that for the committee to think about at the moment. So, right, any questions from anyone, please?
Yeah,
Anne?
Well, first of all, thank you for the presentation.
Yes, thank you.
garden, when is that going to progress? It's volunteers, it says.
Yes, so it's a bit of an ongoing project there that continues to develop, so we haven't got an exact date in terms of that launch, but once we've got that confirmed, we can share that.
Yeah. Okay, it's all right. I go there quite a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And it used to be beautiful, actually, and it's sort of really, it's rewilded now. the other thing was, I didn't know what a Kelder shower was.
Sorry, I probably should have expanded a little bit. So the Kelder showers are kind of a flow restricting shower that helps reduce the volume of water used and the volume of gas used as well to heat the showers. So in essence, I won't bore you with the full detail, but they in essence will reduce the volume of water and gas usage and whilst providing a similar service to the normal showers.
And I did want to ask about something that a lot of the constituents have been asking about, and that's the toddler park in Rowley Park. A lot of people have been complaining about it because it's a lot of the equipment is broken. There's very old sand in there that apparently smells. I did pass it on to people, but I haven't had any sort of. I'm just wondering what your plans are for it.
Yeah.
People are worried about taking children in there. They don't feel it's safe.
Yeah, I appreciate that fully. I think at the moment, locally, we're trying to manage and mitigate it as much as possible with what can be locally controlled. However, we're working closely with staff and borough team and looking at plans for potential development and further expansion of that in the future. So, as I say, at the moment, the main mitigation is how we control it locally and what we can do. We've invested a significant amount of money into rebark in some of the areas within there this year. And as I say, further plans and development are kind of looked ahead across this year to where we can put it.
So in the next 12 months? So.
Yeah, definitely. As I say, lots of work going on.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Anybody else, any questions? Yes, Jenny.
Thank you. Have you got any thoughts this year of bringing back the classic car event at the council?
I think in terms of, we're kind of open to return to any key events. I wouldn't say there's any closed door at all. We've seen quite a success this year, and for the second year in a row, in the inviting event that we held in the summer. And anything that can drive further participation into the venues and further communities to engage with, then I'd say we're open to that. So I wouldn't say there's any plans necessarily within the pipeline directly, but it's not ruled out.
I think there was a problem with parking, was there? Is that why it was stopped?
It's slightly more historical than myself, so I probably won't be able to share too much of the information, but I can delve into that.
Okay, so can I just know?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The other thing I'd like to ask, at the Gatehouse, when you have shows on there, particularly children that don't like a lot of noise, do you or would you consider supplying ear defenders for them?
Yeah, potentially. We work closely with the Health and Communities team, and we work closely around that accessibility in terms of some of our provisions that we offer. So whilst it's not something that's come to the forefront directly in terms of feedback from customers, we would be looking to put sessions on that could support them, and potentially things like ear defenders or earplugs could be an idea that we could explore. As I say, we haven't had much of that feedback directly in terms of at the Gatehouse. However, as I say,
yeah, because it was really quite awful. It was quite rude, actually. There was someone sitting behind, and there was a child in front with ear defenders on, a very derogatory comment. And I thought if you supplied it and made it available and people are aware, it will take the stress off the disabled children.
Yeah, completely agree there. As I say, from our side, as Freedom as a whole, our passion is clearly making the facilities accessible for all. If we can make adjustments and movements that are, you know, more accessible and more comfortable for individuals, then it makes the most sense. So I'll meet with the team and understand that.
Thank you very much.
Julian, did you want to say, have you got a question?
Yes, you've mentioned everybody in this report associated with Freedom and Leisure. Yet there's one element of staff missing, and that is the role with the trade unions. I take it from being transferred from the council to Freedom and Leisure a Tupi agreement was used,
yes,
when the workforce went across the feet and left you, and therefore there must be a recognition agreement with Freedom and Leisure and their workforce, and hope you realise the vital role that trade unions play in productivity, health and safety issues, and the general well-being of the workforce. So is this taking place in negotiations between Freedom Leisure and the trade union representation?
Obviously, I was around at that Tupi transfer, and it was absolutely that process that went through, and we have a lot of the team who obviously are still part of those terms and conditions. We welcome involvement and discussion and consultation, obviously, from our union partners. At any point, really, we have very good relationships with our union partners across all our partnerships. And therefore, yes, absolutely, nothing specifically mentioned in the report, but absolutely, if there's any thoughts or feedback about how we can work together moving forward, then we welcome that.
Okay.
Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Andy?
Sorry, Dee.
That's right. I'm the councillor for High Hills and Western Downs, so obviously, although Rowley Park doesn't come in our ward as such, it is a vital area of leisure, free leisure activity. And I appreciate you can't control the weather, particularly the wet weather we've had, and you also can't control the fact that the park's built on clay. But is there anything you can do about the drainage? Because the minute we get any rain, you can't cut the grass, so they can't play on it because it's so long, not properly, and you can't walk on it because it's a bog. Is there anything you can do at all to look at, particularly as you go down towards the Rowley area, so from where the Highfields is down towards the hill, and you've got a lovely, it's great to play football on when it's dry, but the minute it rains, it's just like a quagmire.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the takeaways to understand with staff and borough council in terms of that area and how much it impacts. When we've done some work around, so we speak of the clay park earlier with the bark, we were very focused there on making sure that the drainage outlet was there together in the clay park areas itself. And it rained heavily, bogged, and there was no use kind of to anyone at that point. So when we've redone that work, we've made sure we've tried to change the drainage and carry that out. The further development of Rowley in terms of the grass areas and some of those areas is probably a longer term conversation with the leisure officers to understand what we can do there and what part we can play.
Okay, is that okay? Andy?
Yes, thank you for the presentation. One or two queries. You suggested that the Shakespeare shortfall was probably due to what was on production rather than anything else. A lot of people suggest it's because of move from the castle. I don't think so. I think it's considerably better in towards than having experienced a very wet and windy castle production. You've got, is it Hamlet or?
Yes.
Yeah, Hamlet,
yeah.
This year. Are you expecting a fall again because it's not Midsummer's Night Dream or?
No, I
Romeo and Juliet.
Use the word hope is always a little bit loose, but our hope is that with a more of a kind of headline, more of a mainstream appeal of Shakespeare, that will support some of the development. Obviously, there's some concerns with Hamlet because clearly I believe it's traditionally a 3.5 hour length show. So clearly, if it goes on for that period of time, it might detract from the increase. So there's plans around that. But yeah, I think, as I say, I don't think we're expecting a downfall in previous years.
Yeah.
It's very challenging to find how we engage, and hopefully what's probably visible this year is for next year, that we've took a steer of that localised and trying to put the Stafford back in the production.
Yeah.
The producer and the directors themselves support the Stafford University locally in that engagement there, so hopefully bringing that community back together. We've gone on sale a lot earlier this year than we had done in ever previous years, so everything's in our favour.
Yeah.
However,
so if you engage the local,
yeah,
it has a knock-on effect.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you are, you know, doing more.
Yeah.
You
Have you got another question, Andy?
Yeah,
is that is it?
I've got a couple of others as well.
Pardon?
I've got a couple of others as well.
Okay, carry on.
Yeah, quickly. Energy, coming back, yes, appreciate it. Costs are going up, and we're all cutting back on energy usage. Have you had any feedback at all from either the Leisure Centre or the Gatehouse that it's colder in there? I say that because I was in a production recently there, not starting that, it's in the audience. There was one or two members of the audience going, oh, it's a bit cold here, isn't it? This around, and I just wondered whether you consciously.
To be honest, that may be on the back of we've unfortunately in the recent couple of weeks had some issues. I think I'm potentially going to guess you might have been in the Met Theatre by any chance, but but we had some issues in terms of heating in there and how it was operating, which we've just sort of getting repaired. Mm. There hasn't been huge amounts in terms of that feedback from our customers and challenges. We clearly, as a company, have set some aims and levels that we want to kind of work towards to help reduce. However, there's a clear balance of making sure that it doesn't impact us.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I mentioned this morning on a call that there's no point us reducing the cost in terms of energy and using less if it means less people coming to our building, because ultimately it's not going
to. I checked the spelling of colder showers, it wasn't supposed to be colder
showers. Oh, colder showers, yeah. I hope you're actually a little bit warmer and actually tend to be a little bit more powerful than the normal showers, which
yes.
is very confusing when you think they're saving energy.
And the last question I got was, I've heard snippets on Grapevine about the state of the building at the Leisure Centre. There was an issue with guttering or drainage down the side of it, and there's something to do with the effect of the brickwork in places. I don't know if that.
Yeah, we've had some remedial repairs carried out in the last few months there of kind of some long-standing challenges. The potential that you've had some guttering issues on the external part of the building there. There's been some internal pipework issues as well,
mm-hmm.
Which have all been addressed and taken forward now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes,
Councillor
Ross.
Thank you for the great presentation.
Right. Yeah.
It's great to see some of the great initiatives that you're taking, such as the solar panel installation and the herb garden at Staff Castle. I was wondering if there's any further plans for like increased biodiversity up at Stafford Castle, say wildflower planting alongside the herb garden, maybe some native tree planting, those kind of initiatives.
Yeah, I think they're all part of the wider focus for us as we build and develop. Clearly there's an element of limitation in terms of allocating the resource to drive forward some of these initiatives, and that's where the volunteer scheme has come in really well, because it's really some of those individuals are really passionate about the impact they can have on the community. And we're stretching that out. We recently carried out a wild kind of flower area across at Raleigh Park, which was something as well that wasn't done previously. So they're definitely all part that are on the agenda moving forward. In terms of time and when we can implement them is always the challenge. But there's kind of nothing ruled out in terms of where we can take that.
That was your question. Another one?
Yeah, there was a second question. So I know sometimes you struggle with like staff retention, and I know there's obviously a national problem with like part-time and zero-hour contracts making it difficult for it tends to be younger staff, lifeguarding, etc. I was wondering if there's any initiatives to increase staff retention for younger people over a long time, such as full-time hours, initiatives. Like, as you said, there was some good recruiting and getting people into higher up positions. Is there something similar like that?
Yeah, we have development plans in place for. Our colleagues, in terms of that investment in individuals over the, I'd say it's my years in leisure, it's been very strange over the last couple of years because, as I mentioned earlier, we're recruiting individuals that don't have the qualifications. It's very strange. A couple of years back, you would have made sure they had a swim teacher qualification or an MPLQ before they joined, and that was a requirement. Whereas now, people have got that passion and drive and desire, and they're seeing the right person, then we're investing that training and development in them. And in terms of we do push a lot of our colleagues into preferably more contracted hours, part-time or full-time. However, there is an element of flexibility that works quite well for some of the individuals in the age range. In terms of the casual contracts, we get people come back from university during the time and return. So it's never kind of ongoing balance, but we do have various reward schemes within Freedom that we do have colleague rewards and colleagues of the month, etc. Those kind of things, my staff shop, which provides rewards for our colleagues as well. So lots of different things being looked at to, as I say, retain and attract new kind of colleagues to the team.
That's great. That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Picking up on that point, actually, that Councillor Ross just mentioned, do you take into consideration people with that's leaving and with learning difficulties and that? Do you ever take any of those people that's looking for employment? Do you employ any of those that's you know, struggling to find employment because of their disabilities?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we sit and kind of have a strict procedure in terms of who we attract. I think we're open to the door of attracting anyone into the workforce. And supporting those through that journey. So,
Well, thank you for that.
Please, could you just clarify what is your minimum qualification for lifeguards?
So, once the lifeguard has really got the training, they have a national pool lifeguard qualification.
While they're waiting to be trained, how much pool side work do they do?
They wouldn't do any. They wouldn't supervise at all. So. Whilst we would take people on, we clearly allocate those individuals' work that was not full side.
So
some of our venues have sports halls, areas like that, where there'd be set ups and takedowns in those areas. They clearly support the wider training regime, the cleaner regimes and the centres as well. So, as I say, they hold their NPLQ for a period of 2 years. They have to attend monthly training to be able to keep their.
Is it updated because you need to be relatively fit, don't you?
Yeah, so they have a syllabus from the RLSS, the government body for the National Pool Qualification, and they have to regularly attend with a qualified trainer assessor that's carried out each month, so they have to be at a required level to be able to work the following month, and if they're not, then unfortunately lifeguard, they cannot then supervise the pool.
Thank you.
That answers your question, Louise, thank you very much. Has everybody had their questions? I've got a few questions myself, actually. Sorry? Yes? Okay, yeah.
Back about 3 months ago, I was inundated with emails, calls to do with the leisure centre. There were some birds trapped in the roof. This happened on a Sunday. The relevant people from Stafford Borough Council were involved. Numerous animal charities, especially the protection of the birds, from as far away, one of them was North Wales. Can you please explain to the committee what exactly happened?
Yeah, to give a brief summary of this, there was a gap in the guttering that's been there for a period of time, and birds in essence were kind of nesting in that area. We used a contractor to be able to get the birds out in the right way, and then to install some. Well, much as it looked like a clear perspex, it's actually a very fine netting to prevent birds from re-entering that area. Clear at that point, what became evident after the contractor carried out this works was that actually the full level of birds hadn't been removed from that area, unfortunately. So we had to reinitiate a contractor to return to remove that netting to carry out that work on a second phase rather than the first.
And it was done, wasn't it, without one fatality to a bird? They all survived.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Julian. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Well, isn't Stafford awesome? Because I think
Catherine Nixon.
Sorry.
Shop, thank you. Right. Just a few questions. The current numbers of people learning to swim and declining and fitness have gone down. Is that due to the Stone Leisure Centre opening, do you think?
No, I think there's probably a little bit of a mixture there. In terms of, if you look at this current year's performance, if we were speaking of the times of now, that trajectory is now upwards, going in a positive direction. I think we can be honest in saying I think there's some opportunities that have been missed previously, potentially the Stafford Leisure Centre, that have been realised now, and there's plans in place to help grow and develop those. So I don't think there's a knock-on effect to the other sites. As I say, the trajectory is positive now these times. I think there's just an opportunity missed where actually now it's been realised.
Yeah, it's just interesting the number of, you know, the population's growing in Stafford, just to see that the numbers have declined and you wonder why. Yeah, and do you also cater for the young ones, like 1 to 5 year olds, baby classes and that? There's plenty of that going off at
the
leisure centre.
If we're speaking specifically about Learn to Swim, we take the Learn to Swim programmes from 3 years old in terms of that, from 4 months old. As a parent and baby style class until they're three, and then the lessons. If you're looking at the wider involvement, one of the schemes we've just recently launched is a Gym Tots programme, which is specifically focused on those younger individuals, that kind of preschool age, and that engagement with parents and those in the gymnastics environment.
Well, thank you for that. My other question actually is to do with health equalities, especially for the elderly. I know you've got this beautiful new gym and everything looks fantastic, but does that take into account exercise for the elderly that can't, you know, would you think of doing armchair exercise or anything or something like that? When that building was first built, there used to be a little section that was separate to the big area gym, and the older people, shall we say, that gentle exercise as opposed to... You know, I look at that equipment sometimes and think, I wouldn't know what to do with it. It frightens me to death. But if you could, you know, is there anything that you could, is there anything there for the elderly that they can do very gentle exercises as opposed to, are they taken care of?
Yeah.
And
so
I'm talking about age group from 65 to 90, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, one big thing to mention is, I touched on it earlier, we have relaunched the exercise referral programme of individuals getting referred across, which it does support. Those are potentially challenges in exercise and how we look at embedding them into those kind of active lifestyles. We have got target groups that we focus on, one of them being older adults, and things like the chair-based exercise that you mentioned, and various activities like that are all on the agenda for us to grow and develop as we move forward.
Good. So that's quite interesting, actually. The other thing I've just got to mention is I notice a lot on Facebook and freedom, you know, leisure centre is closed, leisure centre, and I'm thinking there's a lot of this happening. Is there any particular reason why?
Yeah, I think, again, being the very open and transparent approach of this, I think historically there's been some issues and challenges that have been a kind of mix between plant and equipment failures that we've had in the facilities that are unfortunately unpreventable. But there's also been times previously, if I'm being again transparent, is that we could have acted in hindsight faster or carried out a different action that may have resulted in less impact for the community in terms of closures. However, I hope what's probably noticeable is if we look over the recent times, over the last 6 months, the volume of closures or cancellations has significantly reduced, and we're far more proactive at this current moment in time in ensuring we're kind of ahead of the curve where possible. They're all clearly. With aging buildings, will always be a risk of a fault or an issue that goes that's unpreventable. But we've got that proactive scheme in place to reduce that. And as I say, over the last 6 months, hopefully what's quite visible is the volume of messages you see are far more reduced than what they were the 6 months prior.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I think everybody at the committee's had all their say. Have you got another question, Dee?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. It was just about. I sit on the Economic Development and Planning Committee as well, and I'm also chair of the Task and Finish Group to bring more footfall into the town. And one of the findings we've just done a sort of question and answers around the town is that the impact of, and I know why you had to do it because the market square was shut, but the impact of moving the half marathon and the 10K to finish in the Victoria Park had quite a big impact on the centre of the town and the trading. So is there any plans to bring it back? We've got a fabulous new square. We need to use it. We need to bring footfall into the town. Is there plans to bring it back into the market square?
Yeah, I think this is something we discussed with ourselves and the client officers locally. I think one of the things to potentially draw attention to is that those areas of the Victoria Park, we've used as a race village, which is normally for the individuals taking part in the race to be housed within there, and as the numbers grow, it suits the best. So we wouldn't see that there'd be any reason for people to drift from engagement in terms of the Market Square and the other areas, being as the spectators and individuals aren't meant to be in the race village. Ultimately, it's the people that are taking part in the event. But it is something we sit and review with the client officers in terms of how that makes them aware.
Yeah, I mean, the information we got, and talking to members of the public, they really enjoyed it finishing in the Market Square, very much so in the past, and it did bring in an awful lot of footfall, which has been sucked out of the centre of the town to Victoria Park. According, you know, we've spoken to traders and there's a organisation that looks after the traders. They're working very closely with the council, and that's the biggest thing that came out of the feedback.
Yeah, I think just one of the things there, I think what's worthwhile for us as Freedom and those events is to probably get greater sight of what that impact looks like. Essentially, what's an element of difficult for ourselves is the feedback we get from our end, from the people that are taking place and spectators, is very positive. So essentially, as we mentioned there, maybe there's not the full picture, but so I urge kind of the information to come forward for us for future
review. We are getting we're trying to get some actual facts and figures which I can pass on to you.
Yeah, that'd be very useful, thank you.
Anna, did you want to come in?
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to actually ask the same thing. Could we have a look at that information? Because we've also had some different information suggesting there was quite a bit of disruption as well to traders. So obviously we need to have the full picture to be able to balance that as well. I think when we have made the decision to finish the race in Victoria Park, what we've made sure is that the route is still through the Market Square, and we have areas for spectators there as well to try and balance that. Because we also have obviously invested a lot in Victoria Park as well, so clearly we want to take people to the new areas that we have been redeveloping as well. Clearly as well, we're going to be doing quite a bit of regeneration work in the town centre, so we will have to look at routes if there's going to be any disruption there as well. So we're working with that team to understand if we're going to have to do anything like that as well.
And I appreciate that, and I think particularly with the potential disruption with the demolition of two major buildings in the air might put people, just thought of it, like put it off. So the more we can bring into the town, say if it's safe to do so, I appreciate health and safety, but the more we can bring into the centre of the town, it's going to help.
Thank you very much. I think the committee's had a, and I don't think we've got any questions on those pages I mentioned on the pink pages. So, Jenny, do you want a quick?
Yes, quickly. I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Stafford Friends of Don Louise Charity. I'm a committee member, and on the wildlife, you always look after us very well at the store. So that's very much appreciated, and we raise an awful lot of money for that.
Thank you, and I'll share that feedback with the team as well.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. And I'd like to thank you for the production you put on at the Gatehouse, because my bank balance has gone down. But no, I've got to say, I think the committee's asked all the questions and everything that they wanted to. And thank you very, very much, Alistair and Jeremy, for coming along and giving a very comprehensive rundown on Freedom Leisure of the last 12 months. Probably see you again next year, probably. But thank you very much, and thank you for giving your evening up to come along. Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you. Right, ladies and gentlemen, committee, we'll move on to now the Housing Plus. And I'd like to invite Les Clark to come along to the table, please. Good evening, Les. Nice to see you again.
You.
I can't believe it's 12 months since you were here last time. Where has it gone?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. The subject of wellbeing, which is obviously one which is very dear to my heart. For me, that's why we do this, because it is all about wellbeing, not just of our residents, but of the people in the communities that we serve. And the wellbeing parts really, I think, are the plus in the Housing Plus group. obviously, like any organisation, we can't do everything, and there is such a lot of need out there at the moment. So we have to think about what our priorities are. I think obviously you want to support people who are in greatest need. For us, a lot of it is about enabling people to sustain the tenancies, because obviously having a home is an important step in enabling people to achieve well-being. It's also about helping people to find a home, because it's providing a platform for better lives, and it's about supporting communities and enabling better opportunities. So some of the things that we've been doing aren't even aimed at tenancies or housing, but it's about the general fitness, health and well-being of the communities. The challenges that we face are increasing need, and we're seeing a lot of people now accessing food banks, for example, and a lot of people facing poverty. You know, one of the things which has amazed me really is that people can't even afford what you might call basics, like sanitary towels and sanitary products for women, obviously. Resources are stretched, and not only are they stretched, they're still stretching. And you know, there's come a point when you stretch things an awful lot that they snap. Mm-hmm. So we're very conscious of the need to make sure that what we do is resilient. Financial capabilities are diminishing. There's less spare money around. Like everybody else, we've been faced with issues around the interest rate increases. And that's the interest rates are an interesting one, because actually we have to pay interest on the loans that we've made over the years to build new houses, etc. As the interest rates go up, that diminishes the amount of money that we've got available to do other things, including improving properties and some of the social stuff that we do. Our income obviously mainly comes from tenants, and so we have to ensure that the money that we're spending, which is essentially their money, is being spent appropriately and wisely. And although we're charged with managing those budgets, I'm forever conscious that actually it's the tenants' money that we're using, and so we have to spend it wisely for things that concern them and are in accordance with our charitable purpose. So I just want to tell you a little bit about the Back to Basics project, because the Back to Basics project, I absolutely hate the title, but it got that title because we were talking about the good old days when the rent man used to come along with his little satchel and collect money, and he knew everybody on the estate, and everybody knew the rent man. You know, every Wednesday he would come and collect the rent, he'd stand on your doorstep, and he'd look through the door while he went to get the money to while he marks his card, and he saw what was going on. He spotted a thing which these days we call soft intelligence, but you know, it might have been nosiness, but actually it was generally driven by concern. And what we thought was really, you know, when the man was going around the little satchel to collect your rent, you didn't get your ears that you've got now and all this sort of thing, but also, you know, you would spot people who were struggling and having difficulties. And particularly since COVID, actually, a lot of people don't want to let people into the home, and they're very anxious about things. So we set up this pilot, I think a lot of things always depend on who you get to do the job and the people that are involved. We've had an absolutely fantastic neighbourhood officer called Lindsay, and she's done things like state walkabouts. She goes and meets every new tenant to make sure that they're settling in. She's helped customers to apply for home improvement grants, you know, that wouldn't be available to everybody, and enables them to do things to improve the home and helps people to access benefits. She's also spotted what you might call low-level antisocial behaviour, but not quite in the threshold for antisocial behaviour. So it's things like people who have got 3 or 4 Astra trolleys in the garden, for example, or fly tipping and just dumping stuff in the garden, which sort of makes the estate feel not very nice and can cause tension. So she jumps on that very quickly and kind of says, "Oi, mate, get rid of that out of your garden." And they do. But she's also there to help people, and when people are worried about repairs and they're not getting anywhere. And there's such a lot that goes on digitally these days. You know, digital by default in many cases seem to have become digital or nothing. We are very conscious not that it's digital by default and not digital only. But for people who are you don't have to be technophobic, but you just don't necessarily need to have the patience or whatever. And Lindsay's there to help people who perhaps can't be bothered to do battle with the internet or customer service and things. And, you know, and I'm kind of in that camp sometimes. I give up if I don't get where I want to quite quickly. But it's really paying dividends, you know, in improving the states and improving well-being and helping people to access services and grants. So we've done the pilot, and one of the things that we're interested in is to see whether those improvements that we've seen are sustainable, or does it tail off after a little while once the novelty of the delivery has worn off, and whether we should just actually, instead of having that high level of input everywhere all the time, whether we should move that around and rotate it, and then you don't get that fatigue syndrome. So we're going to be evaluating that and seeing how it goes. But it certainly seems to have been very successful. We've also established My Community Fund, which is a little pot of money. It's not a hell of a lot of money, but it's a decent sized pot. And we give this out to local groups that are trying to do something within the communities, but they just need a little bit of help. So one of the groups that we gave some to is an orchestra for children, a children's orchestra in Stone. I learned to play the trombone for a little while. While I was a little boy, not for very long, and I don't think my neighbours would have thanked anybody who gave money to people to get me to play the trombone. I think the only thing that's worse than a kid learning to play the trombone is a child learning to play the recorder. And every time I say that we give money to a brass band in Stone, I think, I bet the people in Stone hate us. But we did do that. We also gave some money to a women's football team. We've done some work with Girl Guiding and Scouts. So we've given a lot of money out to just little projects. I mean, one of the ones, this one wasn't actually in Staffordshire, but there's a community hall, and it was just left to rack and ruin, really. Then a couple of local women sort of said, we could do something with that. And then they got stuck because there wasn't a boiler, and so it was bloody cold. And so we gave them the money for the boiler, and our property team fitted it so it could be done very quickly. And now that little hall is being used regularly and providing boxing lessons and places for exercise and women's groups and so on and so forth. And it was about £1,500. And it just goes to show, really, that with a little bit of investment in the right place at the right time, you can achieve an awful lot. And that's what My Community Fund is about. And it's done some great work. I think for me, one of the other interesting things, we had a lady who moved into Wren Court, Wren House, which is a lovely new property just opposite Pennycross Tower Block, and she couldn't hear, she's deaf. And some of the residents thought, you know what, she must feel pretty excluded actually, because she can't hear what's going on. So they wanted to learn to sign. And so we actually got some stuff to enable her to deliver sign language classes and teaching to the people in the scheme. So the people in the scheme learned to speak sign language so that she could be included. And again, wasn't very much, but what a fantastic thing to do. You know, and so then we've invested in the Wren House Singers. So it's just a small group of people who get together and sing. I laugh when I say that because I went to one of the things that they did last year and I actually joined in with the singing. Somebody passed wind while they were singing, and it just completely ruined the sort of seesaw. And everybody stood and that I tried to blame people saying it was. But you know what? That was all part of the fun of the community that this enables in the people's housing scheme. So it was really great. So, as I said, it's a youth orchestra in Stone. So there's a lot of little things, and you know, they seem quite trivial in the sense, but actually, this is a group of people who probably would have sat in the flats, but they come together to sing, and it doesn't matter that they can't sing terribly well, and it's not necessarily in tune or whatever, but they're having a great time, and they're amusing everybody else. And you know, the people in Wren House will talk about the passing wind story for months, really, and still probably wonder who it was, and I still do. But there we go. So that's a great little fund. We've got the Employment Money Advice Service, and this works principally out of community hubs, but also is available through the website and through calling into our offices. And they've enabled people to make an awful lot of money. As you know, it's just over a year ago that we opened our community hub in Burton Square. That's been a phenomenal success. The demand for Burton's and for that hub has outstripped our wildest imaginations. We had more people through in 6 months than we anticipated getting through in a whole year. Again, down to personality to a large extent, Claire Paulson, I think it is, that runs the service there, is just phenomenal, very engaging, engages in the local community. We've got a person who used to be one of the retirement living officers called Tony, I can't remember last name because she keeps getting married, and she just loves to get people more money and to get people to access the benefits, and she's really passionate and enthusiastic about it, and like, she gets a real kick out of it. And so we've got this really fantastically energised team, just determined to enable people to make more of their lives. So one of the other things that they've done there is they've joined in with this organisation called Period Poverty, which is about providing sanitary towels for women who can't afford to buy them. And you know, it's quite shocking that that's needed, but it's there. But they're doing the work, but we are providing a facility for them to get access. And I said to her, guys who were in sexual health before I came to Housing Plus Group, and I said, you know what, we should also think about whether or not we can get access to things like family planning. Because sometimes there's a family that we worked with a long time ago, and everything was going really well, and then they became pregnant again. I thought, oh my goodness. And I think if we'd said to them, you know, are you interested in having 5 children? She probably would have said, good God, no. But nobody took the next step and said, have you thought about your family planning? And we can't give them family planning advice, but we can raise the question and make the facilities available to them. So they might not go to the GP surgery, they might be too embarrassed to go to the GP surgery, particularly if it's a religious reason for that. And so we can provide the facility where the family planning team can come and work with us, and we can provide information which can open doors. And so we're doing that, and we're also working with the NHS to do well people's health checks. So we've got, I think it's one day a week that they're going to be coming into Burton Square. And again, that makes great use of the facility. And what's nice about these things is when you put everything together under one roof, they come for one thing, but then they access another. And I think that's particularly brilliant. So they might actually come for the sanitary towels, and might come for the condoms. But when they're there, you get the opportunity to look at our employment service and think about how they can manage debt. And people are embarrassed to say that they're in debt, but while they're there, they might just say, oh, I wish I could afford a holiday. And then they get into a conversation about how they're struggling, and then give them money advice. So it's really made it accessible and easy to get to. And they've enabled people to get something like almost £3 million in extra income through getting reductions in getting cheap electricity, cheap utilities, and accessing benefits. And I haven't actually put it on there, but we've also joined this scheme that gives social housing tenants. It costs, I think, £2 per tenant per year, which we've paid for. So every tenant can access the scheme. They get discounts at supermarkets and places like B&M and everything like that, which everybody uses. And it's a great scheme. I've forgotten the name of it, to be honest. But it is fantastic, and you'd be mad not to do it. So we've started doing it, and it's a small investment for the benefit that it delivers for every single tenant in social housing. If you want to know the name of it, I'll find out, because I just realised earlier that I hadn't actually put that on here. So there's some of the statistics from the Employment and Money Advice Service and what we're producing. I actually can't see that terribly well. I think my cat has handy to do it again. But I don't know if I'm buying more my phone. But as you can see, the pretty phenomenal results, you know. Money savings for customers due to support £3,351,000.
Wow.
Customers helped 3,139 customers help to achieve savings. The debt cancers have saved our customers £105,166 and supported 33 customers with specialist debt advice, helped 42 customers into employment, and saved £37,266 on utility bills. So these are really good good numbers. You know, we gained 1,596 people coming through our community hubs. We've now opened I call it a peripatetic community hub, which amuses my chief executive because it's not a word that she uses frequently, but it's a lovely word. But instead of just having, in South Staffordshire, we haven't got a town, so we haven't set up an office in a place, but we move the service, so we take the service into various places. And I think that's a model that we're going to evaluate, because actually, whilst we've got the hub in Burton Square, I think there are other communities like Eccleshall and all that sort of thing that actually you could probably do with a mobile hub going there for people who can't get into Burton Square, etc. So I think that's going to be a really useful model. At the minute, we're using existing facilities, so we're using fire stations, libraries, and so on and so forth. In time, I think it might be just an idea to get a sort of Winnebago type thing, then we can really take it anywhere and park it in as the car parks and things like that, or the supermarkets, and just really take it to where it needs to be. And we can also use that to do things like recruitment, etc. So, you know, some really good stuff there, I think. Reconnected is a fabulous scheme, to be honest. I absolutely love this. And again, it's because you've got this amazing woman that runs it, and she's just absolutely infectious. And we run all these brilliant events. And the idea behind this was that when we had the lockdown, people retracted and they never got out and they didn't meet anybody and they didn't see anybody. And it's left a lot of people with friendships that don't exist anymore, possibly because they died during the pandemic, or possibly because people have just become older and frail, or just don't come out anymore. And this is about getting people out. And reconnected with the friends and the communities, and they do some fabulous things. And one of the things which I think is really clever about this is that actually they have a third Friday club, so you don't need to wonder when it's on because it's the third Friday of the month and the first Monday. And so it's really good things like that. They have this entertainment, and there's a group called the Bluebird Bells, and they sing sort of like old fashioned songs. Like the Andrews sisters, I don't know if anybody remembers them.
Beverly sisters, yeah, go on.
That's it. And it's that sort of thing. But it's immensely popular, and they do cinema nights in one of the social clubs. And I don't know if you know the English Dominican congregation in Stone, but if you don't ever go anywhere else, go to the church in the English Dominican congregation, it just brings a sense of peace on you. And actually, some of the nuns come to the film shows in the social club. And you know, as somebody who was brought up by Catholic nuns, I find that really heartwarming and amusing. And having been to there, I just, the idea that a nun comes to the pub to watch a movie just tickles me. And actually, for me, it shows how well this woman has managed to reach the community. And the other thing about people like the nuns in the community is that actually they're very well connected with the community, so they're your ambassadors, and they're talking to the people coming to the church. And you know, and a lot of people might be skeptical, but think, well, you know, Sister Bernadette can go, I can go. And so it's been really good. We got national lottery funding for that, so it's not costing anybody apart from the people who play the lottery. And we had a really successful bid. The numbers that are attending are just, you know, phenomenal. You know, 500 people attending 61 events that otherwise would have been stuck at home doing nothing. I just think it's really good. And again, it's also increased the number of volunteers that we have. So it's just a really, really interesting project. We provide reassurance calls to people, and you know, if we spot somebody that's got some problems, some issues, we can signpost them, refer them on, and actually just sometimes just ring them up and give them a chat. So again, it's one of those things which is, you know, the really soft end of what we do, but actually makes a huge difference to those lives. And I think it's easy to get is that when you've got a mother that doesn't engage and she's just isolated and lonely, it impacts on the rest of the family. So it's great for people to know that their elderly relatives have got something else to do and are actually making new friends, because loneliness is a massive problem in old age, and it has massive consequences for health and well-being, genuinely. So again, we've got 27 people who are volunteering, doing a whole lot of things like gardening, dog walking, and activities. Dog walking, again, you know, a lot of people have dogs or want to have dogs, but then think because they're getting old and can't walk them as much, they have to give them up. But it's a great source of company for older people. We've started doing some memory cafes, which are principally for people with dementia or people who are caring for people with dementia. And again, it's a cheap form of respite, but also it enables people who are caring to come and meet other people and to spread the load and to say the things perhaps that you can't say to other people. People who empathise and know exactly what it's like, you know, and sometimes people feel guilty about having these feelings, but they can talk to other people who are in the same position. So again, massive benefits attached to that. And we got money, again, I think, I can't remember who got the money for that, but it was a grant application. We got £23,000 to run that, and again, it goes to show a little can go a long way, really. And we've also got lots of money from various charities to run soup kitchen, buy garden furniture, and purchase craft materials. And again, garden furniture, you think, well, so what, but actually gets people outside, vitamin D, sunshine, particularly for older women, where, you know, osteoporosis is a big issue, and getting vitamin D and weight bearing exercise is really important. I'll just talk briefly about the sustained scheme in because it's in Shropshire, and it's funded with money from Shropshire Council, and we provide a scheme based support to people living in sheltered accommodation. And again, it's relatively little money, it employs one person, but they can provide intensive support to people in sheltered accommodation who might be in danger of losing the tenancy. Either because they're not managing the money, they might be feeling isolated, they might be in debt, or they might be having health concerns, and so this person can support them getting access to those services and supporting them in accessing healthcare and advocating for them in terms of contacting GPs and so on and so forth. So it's a small service, I'll pick you up with this Shropshire, but you know, it's not a lot of money, but it does a lot. They're the sort of things that we dealt with in that service. You know, and some of them do require high levels of support with anxiety. And of course, access to mental health services is pretty tricky. So a lot of people with anxiety, low level anxiety, depression, who just need something to do to support them and work through that. So older people's well-being is very important. We have about 2,500 extra care and sheltered housing schemes in the flats in the group. So we've got a huge population of older people who we can support with regular activities. We were talking about seated exercises and other exercises, and we've got a lot of classes. 42,375 people have attended, plus people, about another, you know, 7,500 who aren't residents are coming to our schemes to access some of these things. They have everything from country dancing, quiz nights, bingo. One of our schemes has a full-size snooker table, so again, people come in and play snooker. Quiz nights, karaoke, all sorts of things. And it brings people in and gets people socialising and improves a sense of well-being. And what we did in our sheltered housing schemes, when supporting people funding disappeared, all of those services disappeared too. And people weren't very happy. And when I started in the group, we had something like 50 voids in South Staffordshire alone in our older people's accommodation, because nobody wanted to live there, because it was dual community and it was based on compliance. So we said, well, look, what do you want? And for a relatively small weekly charge, they can get all this support to deliver activities. And we've given them the opportunity, and the decision is theirs. Do you want it or do you not? This is how much it's going to cost. And in general, they wanted it. And, you know, we now have very few empty properties in the supported housing. And our satisfaction, customer satisfaction for people living in our older people's housing schemes is 93%, which is incredibly high. You know, much better than social housing in general. and that's because we've got that wonderful service that makes them feel well. And also, I think it's about 98% of people who live in our sheltered housing schemes say they feel safe in the home. So, you know, these things make a big difference and get a massive investment, but really worthwhile doing. We've also started staff giving back days, so staff can have, I think it's one or two days a year when they step out of their normal jobs and do something in the local communities. So again, we've done working with the NSPCC, Girl Guiding, working with football teams, critical crew working at the fire station, volunteering in some of our schemes as well. We also took part in the Stafford Pride event, which was the first Pride event in Stafford. I was a little bit sceptical about us being there because I thought, well, you just don't know what people are going to say to you when you pitch up in a park, really. But actually, it was very well received. You know, and a lot of people came across and talked to us about the housing, about the employment opportunities within the group. But also, I think it just showed a great deal of support for a community which is still relatively marginalised in rural communities. And you know, a few people came and talked to us about concerns they have, but also about how well we supported them in dealing with homophobia and their own feelings of uncertainty. So that was really actually quite a good event, to be honest. And finally, I just thought I ought to mention the empty home strategy, which has got nothing to do with, well, it's not got nothing to do with wellbeing, but it's loosely connected to wellbeing, because obviously, you know, empty homes are a concern. We are conscious that we have too many empty homes for too long, and we are working very hard to try and improve the time it takes to get empty homes back and occupied. One of the issues that we have with empty homes is that we are getting properties back in a little less good state than we would have hoped. And again, this is where the back to basics fits in, that we're identifying people who leave their homes in a less than ideal condition. And it's not always the people that you might think would be like the people who sort of just like run off and do a one-night flit. Sometimes it's people who are elderly and just don't report things, and so when we get the home back, you know, it's got quite a lot of outstanding repairs, and so we're starting to look at an intelligence-led approach to this. So actually, we're not just looking at the people who are in arrears and so on and so forth, but actually the people who never contact us, because if you haven't had anything done to your home in 4 or 5 years, there's probably some problems stacking up. So we're going to start and look at that and see how we can do some pre-termination inspections, so that when we get the homes back, we're going to be in a better condition and therefore quicker to turn around. And I think that's it, yes.
Wow. There's a lot of information there, lads. Very, very interesting. And I've got to say, can we share those? Can we have a copy of those slides?
You've got them.
We've got them, and we can share them, because I think it's something we can sit at home and, you know, we've got nothing to do, and just sit and read through with it and pick any information up there, you know. And it's and I've got to say to you, first of all, thank you for getting us getting the open house open on Sydney Avenue.
Yeah,
I mean, it took long enough. We've still got equipment in there that needs moving, and that's been going on for months. But
it's been used, and again, we're working with other agencies, which I think is really important.
Yeah, I mean, and I know, right, you said about moving the information right from Burton Square and that, you know, because there's like a dividing line between Silkmore and, you know, with the railway in the middle, and the people in Silkmore don't feel that they, do you understand where I'm coming from? You know, so using the roundhouse, using the roundhouse on Sydney Avenue would be a really good idea. And just out of interest, you know, that Silkmore area to me really needs a boost, and especially the entrance into the estate with the problems we've had with that house down there. Anyway, you know all about that, and I know it wasn't one of yours, I believe. So, but we really need to lift that area. Just to inform you, you know, I mean, on Saturday I've got about 12 people going down there doing a litter pick in that area, because it's such, well, yeah. So, you know, I think it's probably a conversation we might have outside this room, you know, about what we can do with the roundhouse, because I'm really listening to all what you said there, and I didn't even know anything about your community fund, which is brilliant. you know, because we run a food bank from there
yeah.
on a Friday. So anyway, I'll shut up now and I'll pass it around. Yeah,
okay.
Andy.
Yeah, three quick questions, hopefully. Once upon a time, you used to used to do walkabouts within an area which had a lot of social housing, and that would involve local board council, possibly parish councillors, and certain staff from.
Mm.
And if there was any particular external problems, that would be picked up as you did the walkabout, and also residents would come out at the time to you. So is that when you talked about the reconnecting business, is that what you're trying to start?
I think that's probably the back to basic stuff. You know, we have absolutely recognised the benefit of doing the walkabout. And I think we've talked here before about the benefits of involving the local councillors. And so I think getting more people on board with that, I think, would be really useful. And certainly, you know, walking around and being seen is really important. I mean, to pick up things like fly tipping, you know, litter, graffiti, and all of those sort of things which cause a low level nuisance. You know, they're often not quite enough for somebody to pick up the phone and complain about, but actually, it's the start of something which could.
It can be kind of infectious, which
yeah.
is a little bit of it. Some people's windows
yeah.
to dump stuff. I mean,
yeah.
It grabs.
Yeah, nip it in the bud.
Yeah,
it grabs.
Absolutely. So I'd be well to see that. And sort of a question coming on the back of that was what sort of density of housing? You've got the Burton Square community, brilliant place. I opened it
a couple of
years ago. Yeah, and it's a brilliant place, but it's over the other side of the town from where I'm council for ward member. So what you talk about a railway line, I mean I've got the town centre, something like that. Does somebody from the Great Haywood, Hickson and that side of the life have to go across Stafford to the Burton Square?
We've got Parker Court, which is the other side of the town, but it's still a bit isolated in that way. And part of what we want to do really is to take our offices to the people rather than people having to come to the offices, because the offices aren't really very people friendly really, and not that easy to get to. So I think Burton Square has shown us that actually putting a local office in the right place is a really good thing to do. So I think the next bit of work we're going to do is to say, well, where is the next right place? And does it need to be a full-time office, or do we do a peri-protective office, a mobile office, a mobile hub?
Yeah.
And I think one of the interesting things about Burton Square was that actually the indices of deprivation that we've got around there indicate that would be a good place to do it.
Yes.
So we can put those together with things like rent arrears and your social behaviour markers and say, well, actually, this is where we need to put the next one. So yeah, we certainly have our ambitions.
But that's where, you mentioned a Winnebago, like the library, mobile library.
Yeah, exactly. That's
I think would be brilliant, because then you could use it all over. It wouldn't be one area.
Yeah.
And if it, you know, got into an area once every 2 months or 3 months,
exactly.
That would be a massive plus.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it could be advertised locally to do it, and people would see it. So
I think the Reconnected programme, idea is a really good one, you know, the first Monday. So if you know that it's going to be there on the first Monday of the month, you know exactly when it's going to be there.
And the other question I got was you mentioned a memory cafe.
It's really for people who are suffering from some sort of dementia. It provides a number of purposes. One is that actually you can do things which are known to help. So music is known to be good for people with dementia. It helps with swallowing and things like that. Reminiscence, music, and singing and things like that. It's really interesting. We had a project called Songs for All or something like that a few years ago, and I was really quite sceptical about this, to be honest. And somebody said, well, you need to go along and see it. And so I did, actually. And it was really amazing, because there's a guy who went there and he couldn't swallow most of the week, but he would come to this thing and they would sing, and then for about 6 hours after this session, he was actually able to swallow. And there was a lady who, she was sat in a wheelchair, she could hardly move, and the song, I think it's called Autumn Leaves or something, and Seal just done a recent version, and the woman who was doing it was doing these actions, and I was thinking at first, I thought, well, this is a bit patronising. But actually, then I saw this woman who was in a wheelchair, and she actually couldn't do that, but she could do that as far as that. And the pleasure she got from doing that, and you know, that in a sense is some form of physiotherapy, mm-hmm. and occupational therapy. And it came, if you'd asked her to sit in the chair and do that, she felt but because it was attached to a song and music, it made a difference. So the memory cafes provide that sort of thing for people with dementia, but it also provides an opportunity for people who look after people with dementia to have a few hours break, because that's very exhausting. You know, and also they can sit in another part of the cafe and just have a chin back with themselves, but they know that the person that looking after is going to be safe and after doing something which they're enjoying and getting some pleasure from.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Well, I mean, you touched on it actually when you talked about the empty homes and trying to get them back in, you know, in use again. We've had people say that it can take up to 9 months, you know.
I mean, exceptionally, it can.
Okay, so that's like the worst case scenario, is it? So what can we do, you know, what can you do to speed that up? So that, because obviously that's a great frustration to people who are waiting for homes, isn't it? And of course, yes, it is an anecdotal probably thing, but they're probably just so frustrated they're going to say things like that, aren't they?
I mean, you are. I mean, part of the problem is that we sometimes get them back in an incredible condition. Funny enough, we went not very far from here to have a look at one of the homes that we got back in a pretty poor condition. We went upstairs to have a look. We looked across the way and there were 40 Asda trolleys in the next person's car. And those 40 Asda trolleys were full of God knows what, really. Those sort of things take a long time to clear because you've got to make sure that it's safe and that there's nothing horrible and nasty in there, you know, like dead bodies, dead animals, bacteria, so on and so forth. And then you've got to get them out. Then you can almost guarantee that that's what the garden looks like, the house isn't going to be a hell of a lot better. So you've then got all of that. And so, you know, quite often we get properties back where there's been cats and dogs and there's, you know, it's on the carpet, and then when you take the carpet up, it's right on the floorboards, and so you've got to take the whole floorboards up. We're also, a little while ago, we introduced something called the Quality Home Standard, which seemed to be the right thing to do, so that actually when you move into the home, into new homes, it's going to be of a good standard, a good quality. And so for that's going to need changing, we change the bathroom and the kitchen while it's spoiled, rather than bringing you in and 6 months later coming and giving you a new kitchen. And what they used to do was used to say, well, move in, I know it's not right, but we put it right within 6 months. Of course, it never happened. And we used to get lots of complaints. So now we took the approach with that. We've got a quality home standard. This is what your home should look like. And if it's spoiled, we're going to bring it up to that standard before the next person moves in. And you know what it's like, you start on one job and it becomes four or five, and so quite often it takes a long time. So what we're going to introduce a couple of things. One is we're going to start and charge people if they leave the home in a mess. So that should encourage people, because we incur a cost in clearing homes and what people call home improvements, which very often aren't. To be honest, and so we have to put right the improvements that people have made. So if we've got to repair the improvements that have been done, I use that term loosely, then we will charge them for that. So we hope that will discourage people from leaving the home in a mess that we don't have to clear up. We're going to get people to do videos. So when they're handing the notice to say they're giving up the property, we want them to take a video of the house so that we will know what we've got to do before they leave. And we can actually say, you need to put that right, and that right. And if we do have to remove this, you will be charged for it. Now, we haven't really started charging yet, but we think that will start and drive changes in behaviour. And then, you know, there's a balance between, you can get things through quicker by using private contractors, but the problem is when you subcontract the work, you can't always be sure of the quality. It costs an awful lot more. And actually, what you lose in rent from a purely sort of financial perspective is less than you would pay to have a contractor to do the work of dubious quality. we've got to start with the bigger picture though, because it does mean, you know, we've got 3,500 people on the waiting list in Stafford alone.
Uh-huh.
Now some of those are people who are already in properties looking for a different house.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still an issue, and the borough have a lot of people in temporary accommodation, as do all councils. And you know, that comes at a cost.
Uh-huh.
And everything you pay that you don't have to pay is something you can't spend on something else. So we are conscious of the need to improve that performance on voids and committed to doing it. And we're looking at little things. You know, so we had a policy that if it was a greenhouse, we would take that down, and that all takes time and money. And really, why would you? And we've got this thing called the HHSRS, which I can't remember what it means now, but it's the Health and Safety Standard. Health and Safety Regulatory Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And so the little things like if the paving is uneven, we would have to get that level, you know, because somebody might trip up on it.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a degree possibly going too far. And but again, there's so many people who are moving in who have got vulnerabilities, so you just have to be really careful, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's taking the problem.
Thank
Thank
you very much.
Through the chair, Anne, is it
quickly?
Sorry. Yeah.
I thought I was still speaking, sorry. Is that, you know, all the different initiatives that you run, which are fantastic, by the way, I think they're just marvellous. I mean, are they available for people outside of Housing Plus?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Most of them are. But Reconnect is the employment money advice and the debt advice, certainly is, yeah. And all the activities that take place in our Charlotte Housing Schemes. We very much welcome people into Charlotte Housing Schemes because, again, it's destigmatising the product and encouraging people who might want to downsize. Because, again, we've got a lot of people who are in empty nests who, you know, could move into Charlotte Housing and free up some family housing.
Right. Thank you. Julian?
Yeah, I was very interested in your presentation.
Thank you.
But you mentioned Wren House.
Yes.
Well, when I get contact off residents in there, you get the wrong impression of the place. Because I get contacts, generally speaking, from residents who are not happy with fellow residents.
Yes.
Neighbourhood issues.
Yes.
When you actually go in there,
yeah,
it's quite a very diverse set of problems.
Yes.
All under one roof.
Yes.
And you notice there is like a community room. So there's infrastructure built in there for to take care of this in a communal way.
Yeah.
And if you go just across the backyard, you've got the Down syndrome residents.
Yeah.
So can you please enlighten me as to what sort of communal events go on in, first of all, Glen House?
Yes.
If the Down syndrome from across the road, people are also included, didn't they?
They're welcome.
And they're welcome to go, and there must be a lot of people in there that get on with one another.
Mm.
I mean, you went on in your presentation about sign language.
Mm.
But there's people in there who can hear but can't speak.
Yeah.
You know, there's two corridors
in
there that are completely shut off.
Completely shut off?
Well, when I've gone in, I've had to have somebody to open the door for me.
Yeah.
Other residents can't just go in, you know.
Right.
The people that need leaving alone for specific reasons.
Yeah. We would probably call that what we call progressive security. So there's an area which is probably open to the public, and then there's the area which you would probably say, well, this is the residence area and everybody shouldn't just be able to wander around in there. Because what you don't want is, you know, people wandering off the street, you know, for a warm night or drugs or whatever, and just coming into the home and wandering around, because, you know, some of the people who live there are vulnerable. And
that's
so
right,
we have to protect them. That's largely why people move in to support the accommodation. The issue around people not getting on with each other is always an issue. You know, they
get that everywhere.
In the olden days, which I remember very well, Charlotte Housing schemes used to have lots and lots of little old people who were very quiet and quite frail and sat round and played bingo and so on and so forth. The people who are living in sheltered accommodation now are sex, drugs and rock and roll era. And, you know, they were the kids of the 60s and they partied and they had a good time and they fought, mods and rockers. And they get to 70 and 80 and they're still fighting. You're never going to get 80 people in one community who all get on. I mean, I don't know if you remember Coronation Street and Elsie Tanner and Hilda Nockman, but they were forever at each other's throats. And so in any scheme with 80 older people, 80 older people who are probably very much set in the ways which might not be your ways, you're always going to get those things. And that's why we put quite a lot of support in. It's really difficult for the staff that work there sometimes, because old people now can be quite feisty and good on the mic.
Yes!
Let them have this. Let them have
one
to generation. So, it's good luck to them, really. You have to put up with them. We try not to let things get out of hand. It happens. It's hard.
Right, can we move on, because we're keeping we be clear all night. Right, sorry, Louise.
Thank you, Chair. What you're doing is brilliant and beautiful, and thank you to yourself and to Anna as well, because I know how much hard work you both put into this, and it's work from the previous administration and this administration that's made an enormous difference.
You've got a question.
Yes, I do. From my perspective, and I might be wrong, but from my perspective, the homeless figures have come down, but they're still there. But as more people are sheltered within the homes that you're talking about, I'm observing antisocial behaviour and drug use go up. And I've looked at the policies, through the police as well, and I understand why they are as they are. And I'm reflecting on what you've just said, so you're answering my question in part. But as adults are trying to find coping strategies for what they're going through, because we've got rid of some of the problems to do with homelessness and food, it's kind of moving forwards now to teaching adults new coping strategies and maybe work experiences. And I'm just wondering, how do I connect those people who I can see experiencing those difficulties to what you're saying, and how can I support that? Because what you're doing is brilliant and is exactly the next step, but how do I connect this bit to what you're doing?
I think in practical terms, it's that connection which is always difficult, really. And
there's
I think
a body of people who want to do that. So I've got people within that group who want to try and do something. So it's almost like perhaps I don't know how to connect.
Well, I mean, I think reconnect is a good way to get people in, actually, because it's
different ways of connecting, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what's nice about Reconnected is it's not one size fits all, it does all sorts of things. It's got clubs, it's got the volunteering opportunities, it's got the cinema nights, it's got the music nights and the fashion shows, fashion shows, and they do all sorts of things to appeal to a range of interests. And so there's got to be something in there that people want to connect with. But it's about leisure and activity and well-being, and I think it's just about people trying to find. I think it's about understanding what the gaps are and what else we need to do.
I'm just going to say, was it something that you can connect with?
I'm just
with the information you've got tonight.
We're having a residence meeting, so would it be a good idea for you to come to that?
Well, you can take that out of the meeting and speak to Les, Mr. Glock about that afterwards, if you could. But and that's where councillors come in, the reconnection between the public and what's happening there. Jenny.
Thank you, Les. I've got no complaints at the moment from my residents, but I'd like to pick up on
your well-being for older people, and the sunshine vitamin D.
Yeah.
Are they aware that this is available on the NHS? You do need to see a practice nurse or a GP and get your bloods checked to see if you are low in this. And if you are, it's quite easy to have a prescription and stay on it as long as you need it. And it does save osteoporosis and it does help with mental issues as well if you are deficient.
Yeah, we have posters. I mean, vitamin D deficiency is one of the big unknowns, and it's really just come for in recent times. I mean, everybody thinks about it in terms of osteoporosis, but you're absolutely right, it does impact on mental health and well-being as well. And you're absolutely right, for older people it's free on the NHS.
Do you have to insist a little?
You do, yes, there's a few things you have to insist on, like PSA, prostate, zinc antigen tests for older men. And some of the things we do for our well-being and health and well-being sessions is making people aware of these things, like statins, blood pressure checks and all that sort of thing. We're working with other agencies as well to do that and bring that in for and put in the information if it's within the scheme so that they're aware of them, absolutely.
Because it could save a lot of problem in the future.
Absolutely.
And again,
you know, people talk about seated exercise, which is great, but to prevent osteoporosis, you really need weight bearing exercise.
Yeah.
It needs to be something where you're standing up.
Yes.
And you know, that doesn't, you know, balance is an issue, but actually do things that support the balance. But that weight bearing exercise is the biggest thing.
That's important.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to give you the strength.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right, Councillor Ross.
It was just a kind of question with the merger of Reek and Housing, and just that the kind of making sure that all these great initiatives aren't lost in that merger process, along with like the long term issues Andy was saying about like, the mobile offices, making sure that those initiatives are brought forward and continued.
Yeah, I think one of the key things in the merger is about trying to bring local services closer to local people and getting better support. One of the interesting things is that Reek and Housing Group have tenants in Stafford, Shrewsbury, Telford, Canning, Newcastle, Underline. It's only more than Newcastle, but actually, we've got customers all over the place as well. So I think this is going to help us to consolidate and make things more efficient. But actually, really bringing the services to the locality is going to be really important. Reacon are very good at this sort of thing as well, and they have lots of well-being services as well. So one of the reasons why we chose to merge with them was because of the synergies and the comparabilities. They have got something, they've got a massive extra care provision. So between HPG and the Reacon, we have about 1,700 extra care flats. Which makes us a really sizable provider of care and well-being services for older people. So we should be able to use that mass to be able to do something really exciting. So we will definitely be looking at that.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You've got to, right, Dee. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Quickly. Yeah.
Thank you. First of all, I'm actually the councillor for Highfields and Western Downs, and can I say Lindsay Hockley is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
She's absolutely amazing. And if you do have an employer of the year, please put her at the top of the list. Because one of the things that she does do exceptionally well is communicate.
Yeah.
And she's dealt and moved quite a number of my tenants that have had complaints and whatever, and she's been absolutely marvellous. Unfortunately, my fellow councillors have brought to my attention to bring up tonight that about the communication, and that a number of their residents, tenants, and your potential tenants, excuse them, have viewed homes, signed on the dotted line that they'll take it on, and then it's months, it's weeks, months, and they get no communication.
Yeah, I know, that's awful really. It's one of the things that, again, in looking at what we're doing with Empty Homes, we're changing, because you know how I said one job becomes 20, and what we were doing, to be honest, was telling people that the house was going to be available, and then all these things happened and it wasn't. So now we're not going to be giving people dates until we know it's ready to move into, because all we were giving them, to be honest, was disappointment. It's better not to give people false hope. So we're going to tell them when the home's going to be ready. Absolutely right.
Thank you. And just a second one. The government have speeded up the migration from ESA to Universal Credit. I'm dealing with a lady at the moment who's having severely disabled, been on, you know, she's 42, she's been on ESA or its equivalent since she was 18. She's moving over, and the hours and hours I've spent on the phone trying to sort out what are, because I know it, her rent particularly gets paid directly.
Yeah.
What are Housing Plus doing to support like your tenants in this sort of position? Yeah.
That's where the Employment Money Advice team come in.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're really good at it. They know exactly what they're
doing.
Unfortunately,
she's not one of your tenants, but
she could still contact them. They would still help.
Okay. Right. Okay. Everybody out there. Moving forward then, where are you moving forward with Housing Plus? Are you doing any more developments or anything that within Stafford or?
Yeah, absolutely. development of new homes is one of the key things that we're here for. And we certainly have ambitions to do more. We had to slow down the development programme when the interest rates went up because we have got to deliver certain services to cover the interest threshold. But the interest rates have come down. We've negotiated some new lending agreements with the banks, which have given us better terms, which will make it easier. And obviously the financial situation has eased slightly anyway in terms of inflation. So we will be ramping it up again now. And part of the ambition of the new organisation is to build thousands of new homes across the patch, but some of them will be in Stafford. For me personally, I think one of the most important things we need to do as well is to regenerate and actually replace some of the existing homes which are of a very good quality. And I think if we can get rid of some of them and build some new better homes. And part of what we will be doing really going forward is that when we've got homes which are going to cost us a lot of money to repair, is to perhaps to sell them and then use the money to build a new home.
I mean, some of the property that you have got, you know, that you've refurbished, I mean, the ones on Exeter Street and that, and the one beside the Manor School, you know, in that area, you know, I can't remember thinking the name of the road. My son used to live in the old one, so, you know, and the job that you've done there, really.
So, for you, Chair, we've got a lot of concrete flats on my fields that are damp.
Again, you know, we're suffering from years of underinvestment, to be honest, and sweating assets. I mean, the life expectancy of a roof is normally about 70 years. But I don't know if you know Marston House, but we replaced that roof at the tail end of last year, I think. And you know, I could take bets on how old you think that roof was. But it was actually 230 years old. They don't make roofs like that anymore. That is probably quite extreme. But it demonstrates the point that you know some of these things should have been replaced many, many years ago. Yeah. If you don't do it, it's only a matter of time until the rock sets in.
I've got to say, you know, you've given us a real good comprehensive report on Housing Plus, you know, and thank you so much. I think we've covered all the areas that, and I think the committee's asked all the questions they wanted to do.
Okay.
I mean, I'd like to have a conversation with you outside this meeting, but that's for another day. Thank you so much, Les, and thank you for being so open and honest. And I've learnt quite a lot, and I think it'd be quite interesting to see the slides that you've presented with. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very, very much.
You.
Safe journey home.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Right, we'll move on now to item 7C. Right, so now we'll go through this on a page by page, if that's okay. So we're on page 50 now. Is that okay, everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Any questions? No? Any questions on page 51? No? Any questions on page 52? No?
Was
yeah.
Can I say about the introduction of food waste curbside?
Well, yeah, we've got to talk about food waste, haven't we? That, and we'll look at that at, yeah.
Separate?
Yeah, unless Anna wants got anything to say about it. Or Joss, do you want to come to the table?
We are, yeah, through you, Chair, we are, again, as we talked about the other day, we're going to look to put a working group together to look at food waste.
Yeah. We've got that on the work programme.
Statutory requirements from central government.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there anything specific you wanted to
do? It's just, I mean, only branding based, waste, which a lot of us compost anyway, is one thing, but it's just what. However, that would be roadside. I can imagine it attracting vermin and goodness knows what.
Well,
this is going to be covered elsewhere. No, let's bring it up here. It's just
no. Carry on, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly, because I don't obviously don't delay it too much. But government have said that they want all councils across England to introduce food waste collections to increase our recycling rates. That's coming statutory from the 1st of April 2026. Not necessarily doesn't weekly food waste collections, it just takes it out of your residual bin and puts it into a side bin at the side, you'll have a food waste caddy into the side bin. It shouldn't be any different from what we're doing currently at the moment, because obviously we're putting food waste goes into your residual bin, it's just a different bin at the side,
yeah.
That will be put out on a weekly basis, hopefully it'll reduce the residual waste as well. But as I say, it's a national thing. Newcastle and Lyme have been doing it for a long time in Staffordshire. A lot of other authorities do it. A lot of the Welsh authorities do it. Welsh are second in the world, I think, for recycling. You know, anywhere pushing on recycling. But again, we're going to have a
it's on our work programme at any rate. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, page 53. Any queries? What is that? Clay Park. Areas, you know, and we've got a lot of little play parks that need improvement. So, what's happening with that, Anna? Do you know the question?
Sorry, I think this is Joss again.
I think you better stay there, Joss, just
yeah,
in case. Thank you.
Well. Sorry, what was the question?
It was about the play areas and about the funding for the ones that's getting a little bit dilapidated, shall we say. I mean, I've got a few in the area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So this comes up to court. This is a sort of a quarter three thing. So at the moment, we're currently looking at all of the play areas we've got across the borough.
Oh, right. That's
and we're looking to come up with a system where we've got a scoring matrix for all the play areas, and we've got a 4-year action plan to sort of start working through our play areas across the board,
yeah.
Looking at the most deprived ones, the ones that need to work the most, and sort of making that decision. So we've got a long-term plan or a medium-term plan that we can work through. And we talked about this at Cabinet recently, a current briefing. It's something that I did at Cannock Chase Council, so we have a 4-year plan. We're actually now about to start the next 4 years of that plan as we've been working down at the play areas. So you basically look at your deprivation in that area, the need, so what your population is and things like that. So we're currently doing that piece of work at the moment. Sally McDonald's working on that with the street CT at the moment, because she's come to work for me. So that'll come through to following the scrutiny committee, and then in the new year, hopefully, within quarter four, the report going to Cabinet setting out those play areas.
Well, that'd be quite interesting, that. I think we'll all be interested in that, actually. So thank you for that. So that'll be coming forward, do you say, beginning?
Yeah, in quarter four. Sometimes
quarter
four.
Okay.
So we can start working. And what we're looking to do as well with that is, once we've got that lease, we'll be matching the Section 106 funding where we possibly can.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find other alternative funding as well. So there's other grants that are often available and things like that. So at the moment, we talked about Raleigh Park earlier, any conversations with colleagues at Freedom. We've got some section 106 monies for Rowley Park. We need a master plan around Rowley Park to move that forward again with party with Freedom Leisure. And we're trying to find the pots of money to put in to back up, because it's going to be a big project for everyone.
Yeah, Anne, you ask me.
Well, just that you know, that park is unsafe, and you know, in many ways, really, and it's there for very young children. And I think, you know, I'd urge you to make it a priority, actually.
Rowley is a project, it's our next big project that we're working on at the moment. You know, but Rowley is managed by Freedom.
Yeah.
You know,
complicates things.
There's a little bit of an interesting partnership relationship going on there, because it was handed over by the borough as part of the leisure contract some years ago. But we are the section 106, and we recognise the fact that in order to do what we want to do with it, we need to invest in that park. So we're partnering with Freedom to do that work.
Good, thank you. Right, that's page 53. Yeah, Jenny.
About parks, please. Wildwood Park needs some work done on it, and it was promised that it should have been done in April. And I'm still waiting for the repairs to be done. There should have been some 106 money from the Bellway estate, but we didn't get any on that to work on the park. So I'm just wondering where we are with Wildwood Park, because that has really gone downhill.
One of the outstanding repairs, is it down with the softball?
That is one that's still outstanding. Sorry. I don't know how far it's got now, but
okay.
Like I said, they should have been finished in April.
I will speak to Tony Dale tomorrow and find it when we're with the softball. You unfortunately can't use section 106 for what is essentially maintenance work.
No, I know.
That has to come out of revenue, which
yeah.
is why you didn't get the section 106 in that
yeah.
part, because you couldn't identify anything that we could use for that capital money. So that's the issue we've got 106 off.
Yeah, I have got another one, a made up avenue that could have used
yeah.
some 106 money, but
mm-hmm.
was turned down.
Yeah.
The equipment there.
Yeah.
Mm. But anyway, Wildwood Park does need.
I think we've all got play areas that we'd like some money spending on. So, you know, we'll wait for your report to come through, Josh, and hopefully, you know, we can suffice everybody. Right, okay, so that was page... Where did I get to now? 53. Lost my place.
53.
Thank you. Right, page 54. Page 55. Right, page 56. I'll put my glasses on. 57. 58. Is that on the about the food inspection? Is that all up to date now and everything? Because I've got a cross that side of that. Food business inspections. Is that yours, Anna? No, it's Gabrielle's, isn't it? She's not here, so we'll leave that. Okay. Page 59. Page 60. Yeah.
An explanation about the community safety partnership book, please, and what it's saying about case closures within 3 months. What's the managed risk?
Yeah, Dennis quickly signed the indicator. Right, so through you, Chair, this is the cases that get referred to the partnership happen weekly. These are people with vulnerabilities who we want to look at on a multi-agency basis to ensure that their needs are being met and the risk is being managed. So we have the number of referrals that go in per quarter and the number of cases that are closed. What this means is that we have worked together as a partnership to be able to manage that risk. We wouldn't close a case just to meet the performance targets or anything like that. We want to make sure that this is that the risk is mitigated and the residents are safe. So some of them are open longer, but there's often good reason for that, so that the agencies continue to monitor the case to make sure that actually improvements are ongoing and things like that. So it is a multi-agency partnership, including the district, county council, police, fire and rescue, housing association, to ensure if there's issues with particular families, we can work together to ensure they've got the support they need to be able to make the improvements that are needed.
Thank you. And what is the £1.3 million of debt that's outlined?
Okay, thank you. So this is linked to the contract with the Citizens Advice Bureau, and this is per quarter the amount of debt that they see people coming through with. So it's a cumulative figure for the fact that people have helped. So I think we can see above in this quarter it's 656 people. Those people that came through and had assistance had a total of £1.3 million of debt. Assistance advice would have helped
656.
It could be sorry cumulative amount for those two quarters. I need to have a look at the main report. But what it is showing is the impact that Citizens Advice have to reduce that debt, to get payment plans in place, to be able to maybe write off some of that debt as well. So it's showing the scale of the impact that Citizens Advice have.
So it really escalates if somebody's in arrears with something.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's wrong, really, isn't it? It's attacking the work people that can't.
Okay. All right then, so thank you for that, Anna. So, right, so that's the end of that report. So thank you very much, Josh and Anna, and yeah, thank you. I'm sorry it's taken so long, but I mean, I think the Housing Plus was quite interesting, you know, the things that Les came out with, so that's taken. Right, we move on to the work programme. Okay, so the work programme, yeah. I've got... has anybody got any queries on it or anything? We've got to get a task and finish group together, and I think we need to do that probably just after Christmas. Am I right, Josh?
Yes.
You know, we need some names. Can you put an email out to all the committee, Jackie, please, and ask them for names to sit on this committee to look at food waste, please? How many people do you think we should be? Three, four? Four. Yeah. Just four names on that, please. That's brilliant. So that's a question for the committee. Is there anything, you know, from today's meeting or anything that you feel we should be investigating further? I think we've got a lot on at the moment, but
that's the point, I would say. We've got a massive meeting on the 15th of January, item-wise.
Yep.
And this meeting on the 15th of January, we've got a lot of items on it.
Yep.
That's because we had a backlog.
Yeah, we've got a lot of items on it. We've had to make that another meeting, because it would, you know,
We were too backlogged. We wouldn't have got it all in if we hadn't done that.
I know.
But
so
that's a case of clearing the decks, isn't it?
Yep. So, but there's, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, is there anything that we can do as a committee to enhance the enriching of people's lives, especially the 1 to 5 year olds and the 65 plus, you know, is there anything you think we should be discussing or looking at? Well, think about it, there's no need to come forward with any... and the other thing I've got to ask, and I don't know where this fits in actually, but there's been a lot of talk about cycling and what have you, and it's really a question for the borough, knowing that we've got a lot of car parks in the borough, and people are asking about lockable places for bikes in the town centre. Ross, Councillor Ross is going, yeah. You know, and I'm just thinking, where do we take that question?
If Chair, as well, there's a lot of theft of bikes, you see.
Well, this is why it's got to be somewhere where they're lockable, and, you know, so.
It depends, Chair, what the question would be.
It's people that want to ride, I mean, we're promoting cycle lanes and what have you. People are riding into town, but there's nowhere for them to lock the bikes or anything, no secure places.
You could argue that would be a question for planning and economic development, because obviously they put these things in.
Yeah.
Can I think about it and come back to you?
where it's best.
Yeah.
I mean, car parking comes underneath.
I think what I'm doing is asking the hierarchy of the borough council to have a look at the situation, because this is something that's been raised a few times with me. And as I say, I've heard people talk, they've sold their cars and bought a bike. And I think, what?
Yeah.
I can't even ride a bike, but anyway, that's by the by.
Yeah,
I fall off
I mean,
it every time I get on.
Really well.
Yeah. Thank you. And the other thing that's been mentioned, visits to waste, the waste, and that's not come forward yet to any of the committee members that want to do it.
I think it has, Chair. I think we have had committee members who have been on them, so I'm told by Becky. It's been a couple of...
when? Not since the last meeting when we brought it up.
Not since the last meeting, yeah, certainly not. But there have, in the past, I think there's been two or three options according to what Becky's come back to me. She is looking at some more dates after we spoke last week. So she's asking for some more dates from the area.
We've not, are you aware of anybody being on them?
I mean,
apart
from
somebody,
but I couldn't know the date.
Yeah, so she's looking at some more dates. I know there's some of the committee that's...
always a church.
Yeah, okay.
We're one authority of 10 that use these facilities.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. But thank you.
Place that date, the 25th of January.
What's that?
You went,
to Viola, because I went.
Yeah.
Is that this year?
This year,
yeah.
I'm sure it's the 25th of January.
Well, anyway, there's some that's not been on it, so I'll leave that one with you. And the other thing I've got to ask is about, we talked a lot about vaping and premises. On where's that gone? Because it's...
Aren't they going to phase them out, vapes?
Have you got any answers on that, Anna?
I know that Victoria Cooper and Community Safety does a lot of work with the police, with trading standards around vaping, also linked to some of the community safety issues we have in the town centre. So if there's specific questions, we can absolutely put those to the community safety team.
Yeah, I think it's something we were concerned about a few meetings ago, and it seems to have got lost in all the quagmire.
Yeah, just one other thing as well. On the next meeting, we're having a presentation on health inequalities. One of those projects that we did was in relation to vaping. So we'll talk a little bit about it at the next meeting.
Right, that's brilliant. Yeah, lovely. Anything else committed that you're quite happy? Yeah? No problems? Yeah? Okay, yeah.
What might come through on the horizon by the police is I've taken up with them the amount of people who are peddling through the town centre and they shouldn't be. Somebody came through wrong way on an electric bike, incredible rate of knots, wasn't peddling it, so it's clearly self-propelled, i.e. a moped. I wish I got the guts to push them off as they came past, to be honest.
I don't know whether in all areas, but sorry.
That needs to be addressed, and as I say, I've approached the police and they're suggesting a campaign and they're going to take it up with the council, so it comes through if it's not already.
There's a lot of, I suppose in all areas, people riding on bikes, especially this time of year, in black clothing, no lights, absolutely terrifying, it really is. But I am told by the police, because I said if somebody gets knocked off the bike, I bet it'd be the car person that's driving that gets the blame for it. And they said no, because if there's no lights on that bike, then no, they don't. So that's
lights on the bike, you're committing an offence.
Well, exactly. Right, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a long night, we've had a long discussion, and I think we've got to learn a lot tonight. So thank you very much for your time. Safe journey home, and thank you very much, Anna, and thank you, Joss. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Is that all right? It's gone on a bit, but it's...
I'm ready for my bed now.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.